Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, TASS in Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. It is a football week around here. We wish it were a baseball week around here, but it's not. We're watching a lot of baseball on TV. Luke is out in Owings Mills with the infirmary report. He's in the trainer's room out there trying to figure out Lamar Jackson and Ronnie Stanley and when we're going to get Roquan Smith back and how Marlon Humphrey is. And meanwhile, the Houston Texans are getting ready to get on a plane and come up here to Baltimore, play some football this weekend. Enrique Vasquez is he's a returning guest. It's been a couple of years, I think, since we've had him on for some playoff games and a number of years. We're now in the video format around here. He has been calling Houston football long enough to have been with my Oilers back in the day and the run and shoot and the choke and puke and all that good stuff that we did with Kevin Gilbride and all the fun that we have with Warren Moon. 30 years into this franchise, into this, you guys have picked the perfect week to be playing the Baltimore Ravens this week, because this team that we're putting on the field this week, it's not the way Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh drew this up, Enrique.
Well, hopefully that is the case, and thanks for having me again. Of course, it's always fun to come on with you, but you know what? Yeah, going into last week with the Texans and their offense, the way they were shaping up, offensively, they just were not getting things going, and then last week, the game didn't start off well either. 6-0 at the half against the Titans, and finally, Nico Collins. Of course, when you convert a 2nd and 33, That sort of tends to wake up an offense, and that was the case last week. 2nd and 33, he goes down the sideline. I don't know how they just didn't bump. They let him clean off the line. He breaks free, beats Snead down the line, and that sort of woke up the offense. And from then on, obviously it helps when the defense can come up with a turnover. You convert another 2nd and 17 with a screen pass. I don't know if it's how much it's the matter that they face the Titans and that bad defense, but nevertheless. The offense woke up a little bit. The defense is still maintaining pitch to shutout. First time since 2010 that they do that. And now a game that was possibly impossible for the Texans to think they could win going into Baltimore now with all the injuries. Maybe now there's a chance. We'll see.
Well, you're in an interesting division where the Colts have sort of come on with a quarterback that was considered to be failed and anybody could have had him. Jacksonville's always sort of weird. And, I think from where Houston, I thought of your team as having the most talent in the division the last couple of years. And I like D'Amico Ryans a ton. I think there's a sense of community going on down there based on what happened to the Oilers, based on the fact that it's been 20 years and you haven't really won anything. We got a couple championships here in Baltimore and are trying to figure it out. I've always looked at the Houston thing and I say, they're still recruiting the community down there, especially in the aftermath of Deshaun Watson, that winning, you have to win in Houston in order to get people out at this point, because it's been a tough couple of decades from losing the franchise to just not getting where you want to be as a franchise.
Yeah, but the last couple of years with D'Amico coming in and the turnaround that he had, winning 10 games, consecutive seasons, winning the division, getting to the second round of the playoffs. Of course, now this was the season where everybody's going to go by all the way in. And of course, the start here with the team certainly hasn't helped. But I think that D'Amico's turned the franchise around where this was even just 3 years ago, coming out of Lovie Smith, coming out of David, it just bad seasons coming after COVID. The franchise was in a bad place. Now things are turned around. And now it just seemed that changing the offensive coordinator, changing all the offensive line, basically, you only have one returning starter from last year. It finally caught up to everybody. Everybody assumed that CJ was going to keep this trajectory like he did as he started out as a rookie. And it just wasn't the case. And, it just goes to show, winning in the NFL is hard. And when you make all those changes, it does take some time. So let's see what happens now. And of course, add to that you had Joe Mixon out here for the first month, and still there's no word on when he may come back or not. So all those things finally caught up, but the hard work, and CJ's a good quarterback. I think everybody can see that he has the talent, and it was just going to take some time. Hopefully that's the case, and this upward trend that we saw in the second half last week against Tennessee is a sign that things are improving offensively. But again, going back to your main point about the turnaround of the franchise, yes, Houston needs to win to get everybody to buy in. But I think that D'Amico was on that trend. The franchise as a whole was on that trend as well, coming off of two playoff seasons.
I'll be talking to John McClain a little later in the week, and I have a lot of friends, Matt Thomas, a bunch of people down in Houston that have been there a number of years, and certainly for you and your interesting position where you do Spanish language broadcast and you've been a part of this for so long. Do you remember the day you met D'Amico Ryans when he came into the franchise and think, Hey, 20 years later, this guy's going to be the guy leading the franchise and the guy they count on. He's such an impressive guy, and I would think that that began the day you met him when he was a kid, just coming out of college, right?
No, absolutely, absolutely. He had the energy, he had the leadership, and everything that we've heard since then, going back to his days at Alabama. You know, the, just the thing that he was a natural leader, and that was the case. You know, once he got here, and now you can see it, and now you can hear when you hear the players talk about him and the type of coach he is and the type of relationship that he develops. Obviously, you know, he's still in charge. There's no question about that. He's not here to be everybody's friend, and he makes tough decisions when he needs to, and what an example we had last week. You know, when you outright just cut a starter, and a guy that had come in, you know, CJ Gardner-Johnson, who just was not doing the right things. You know, if you're not going to be part of the solution, you certainly can add drama in the locker room, and that seemed to be the case. So everybody knows that he's the man in charge. He's going to treat you right. He's going to treat you professionally. The relationship beyond just being a football player is also going to be there. So that's the thing with D'Amico, that he's set the tone for what he expects from all the guys, and now you see the consequences. If you cross the line, you know, there will be consequences. He will no longer be a Houston Texan, and he's mentioned that before, and a lot of the guys have as well. Not everybody's built to be a Houston Texan, and now that's a good example that he showed last week, cutting CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Well, the Deshaun Watson situation in your community and what we've had here from Ray Rice, we had a Wembley knee situation here back in 17 that the Republicans took the other way. And then the Justin Tucker thing here in the offseason. Building trust in a community that lost its franchise, and you know, I have my old Baltimore Colts helmet here as well, that I see parallels between Baltimore and Houston in regard to community trust, in regard to the franchise. And I think that the Deshaun Watson thing really messed things up and COVID and all of that, and trying to get fans back. CJ Stroud has been a breath of fresh air. And to your point, so good out of the gate that we thought, well, a star is born. I would also say having complimentary players and certainly protection for him and the way that you draft around a guy like that. And that's where they are right now. They feel like they have the quarterback. It's the pieces around them. And as I watch DeAndre Hopkins catch balls here, and I think to myself, yeah, something like that. You guys have seen how good that can be, but you didn't have all the pieces together, whether it was the David Carr era or the Case Keenums and all the years, the TJ Yates. You know, we've seen it all through Houston, but it feels like you at least have the right quarterback. And to me, on the outside, it feels like you have the right coach.
That's what it feels like. And when you go back, you know, to 2011, when the Texans finally made the playoffs, go down to Baltimore and lose with T.J. Yates, and that's when Matt Schaub was probably at his best with Andre Johnson. And to think that those were really the most consistent glory days of this franchise up until recently. You know, it's been hard, you know, as a fan and as a follower of the franchise. But now, as you mentioned, the thing that the franchise seemed to have found their quarterback of the future and Deshaun Watson, and everything was going so well, and then that happened, and then to find another franchise quarterback just a couple of years down the road, that just doesn't happen very often to many franchises. You know, how many franchises are still looking for their next John Elway? You know, how many franchises are looking for their next Tom Brady in New England? So, you know, luckily Houston was able to find CJ. What he has gone through, you know, somewhat expected, I guess, you know, because playing quarterback is hard in the NFL. So we'll see how things turn out. If the changes that were made in the offensive line to protect him, the changes in the scheme are now going to be the right decisions, and how they manage him and how they grow here at the start of the season. We'll see how that all shakes out. But, you know, to have CJ and to have another guy like that who seems to be the right guy for the position, and to take on the pressure and to deliver. Because, you know, frankly, this past Sunday, his back was against the wall. You know, he had a bad start. He had a bad start to the season. He just wasn't playing good. He wasn't completing balls that he did as a rookie. He missed one. He missed a couple balls this Sunday. He had a short touchdown to Dalton Schultz down the seam early in the game, and those are balls and passes that in the past he just didn't miss. So it wasn't a perfect game, but when you go 22-28, you know, that's not bad either. So, you know, he's coming around, and we'll see how he does as the season moves forward.
We're just hoping to get our quarterback on the field this week. Enrique Vasquez has called the games in Espanol for the Houston Texans for going on the 3+ decades. He's also called Bears game. You call college games too, right? Like, you're a busy guy in Espanol, yeah?
Man, yeah, the falls are awesome for me. I do Oklahoma football. This is my ninth season doing Oklahoma football for them down there, going down there. My first season was 2017 with Baker Mayfield. So it was a nice run to get going, right? A couple of Heismans. Jalen Hurts came in as well. And now we have Jon Mateer. So I don't know that we're going to go as far as call him quarterback you. But, if he gets if he keeps going as he is, Jon Mateer, he may make it to the NFL. All of a sudden, we may have, what, six starters that played football at Oklahoma in the NFL?
So every Saturday night, you're either flying from where Oklahoma is to where Houston is, right? I got a guy in Cincinnati that does that with the Bearcats too. Like, what's the craziest commute? Has there been a time where you couldn't call a game because it's just impossible?
Well, this is the thing that now after COVID, especially when flights can get canceled just because, my only option is really to get back to Norman and drive to Houston. Because with the Texans, we don't travel for the road games.
Whoa,
We,
whoa, 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 whoa!
yeah.
That's a big step. How far is that?
It's a 5.5 hour drive
Is
for
that
me.
all? I thought it might have been 10 or
No, no,
something.
no, no. It's
Okay.
a 5.5 hour drive. But then sometimes, we have a late kick or we get back to Norman late. I may not get home until 5, 6 in the morning, and it's, get a couple hours sleeps and drive over to NRG Stadium to call the Texans. But that's just what I have to do. And once a weekend, I can pull that off. If I had to do that twice a week, I wouldn't be able to have. But of
I see
course,
the
month.
gray in you. I'm getting old.
Oh
I'm getting old. I turn old again next week. I birthday.
yeah.
I think of some of the stuff I did when I was younger, doing the radio show at 2 o'clock in the morning in the Providence airport, waiting for the airport to open after being. I've done crazy stuff, but like I'm thinking, this is you call a lot of football. The Houston Texans for you, who are their best players? Like what should we be worried about with our B team out on the field Sunday?
Well, listen, I mean, obviously with CJ coming around, if he can ball like he did this past week, play a little better in the second half. Nico Collins, of course, the receiver to watch. But Jaden Higgins, the rookie from Iowa State, he finally got his first touchdown this weekend. But hopefully that's what opens the can for him and really gets him on track. On the defensive side is where you see a lot of new talent for this defense. And Kamari Lassiter on the other side from Derek Stingley at corner. Stingley picking off his 12th pass of his career this past weekend. But Kamari, along with Derek Stingley, two of the top cornerbacks that we have in the AFC for sure. And then the pressure that they can generate along the defensive line, it goes beyond Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. The tackles do a really nice job of getting push up the middle. Tommy Togiai had a nice game this past week. He wasn't active the first weekend, and now all of a sudden you see him on the line blocking passes, creating tackles behind the line of scrimmage. So really, it's a group effort, and EJ Speed, who came over from the Colts at linebacker, he's getting a lot more run, more of a third down linebacker to come in for Henry Toa, who led the team in tackles last year, but maybe at third down is not his best forte, is not his forte covering backside of the backfield. So EJ Speed has come in, assume more of that role. So that's the group effort that you see from the defense, swarming to the football and making plays all over. But those are the guys that you would hope to be there every week for the Texans. And so far on the defensive side, they've been there.
I got to ask you this as because I don't think about it like this in Baltimore because you're in Houston and you've been Hispanic all your life and you speak Spanish and I'm a gringo, even though I was born to the Aparicio family. I think of myself, I guess, when I think, am I the one of the more prominent Hispanics in Baltimore? I might be the most prominent Hispanic in Baltimore. Odette Ramos and I may have an argument about that, but the Bad Bunny Super Bowl. In regard to, we had the Wembley knee here in 2017. We were playing in Wembley, and with Trump saying things about that was African American. Now I'm Venezuelan. It's about my people and boats and all of that stuff. The fact that the league has tried to reach to the Hispanic community, obviously your franchise, several of the franchises in California, Phoenix, big in Mexico, big in the Latin community. Your Hispanic calls of the games in Houston alone, there's plenty of people that speak Spanish. Not so much here, but when I go to places where it's not lip service and quite frankly, bougie in regard to recruiting the Hispanic community, Hispanic Heritage Month, National Latino Heritage, all of that, you speak to exclusively Hispanic people in another language selling the American sport of football. That is a different kind of export than my franchise could possibly have. And when I go over to Europe and I see Pittsburgh playing, and I've been over to Europe for the games, and I know you have as well, that the game has expanded dramatically, but the language barrier for Hispanic people has been removed for the franchises like you. And I would think that you've been calling a long time in the Spanish language, the game. That, and when I come and see games in Texas, in Phoenix, in California, the amount of Hispanic people I see, more so than even in Florida and Miami or even in Tampa, where I don't feel the Hispanic part of it there, I definitely feel that in Texas. And part of that was, I guess, Bud Adams or the league or whatever came and said, "We need to do these games in Spanish because we got these Hispanic people down here. They want to hear the games in Espanol." And you are their eyes and ears. And I think of Jaime Jarrín in L.A. and sitting in Dodger Stadium in 1985, and Mexican folks out there with boom boxes listening to Fernando pitch, and I'm hearing the game in Spanish. I don't listen to games in Spanish. I speak enough to be dangerous. I could listen to you and figure out pretty much what's going on. But your audience and the loyalty of the Hispanic community for the league and the importance of the Hispanic community in places like Houston, where they really are selling the game now, not just in Mexico or Mexico City or across the border or Monterrey, but like in Brazil. They'll be
Exactly.
playing in Buenos Aires before it's all over with, now that Trump's bailed them out. So, I mean, we're playing games in places where Portuguese is going to need to be the next language, right?
No, and absolutely, absolutely. You know, the game was just held in Brazil. They're committed for the next 5 years to have three more games down there. They haven't been to Mexico in a little bit because of the construction work and remodeling Azteca Stadium. The word was that the Texans were program or the plan was to send them to Mexico this season, but the stadium wasn't ready. So unfortunately, that was the case. So Mexico's missed out because of the work they're doing on Azteca Stadium, but that will be done for the World Cup. So hopefully for next year, 2027, 26, maybe that will be the case that the NFL goes back to Mexico. But like you said, and not only that, the fans for football in general in the Hispanic market, not only here in the States, but in Latin America has certainly grown. I mean, when they first approached me to go down and call Oklahoma football games in Spanish, my initial reaction was, are you sure this is the right place? And I mean, they have been great, absolutely amazing, and how they have received the broadcast. The university has stood behind it and helped us grow to the point that this basketball season, Oklahoma Sooners is going to launch Spanish women's basketball in Spanish.
Is that you?
I'm going to call some because I have other duties in the spring doing
All
some
right.
rodeo, work. They recruited the number one basketball player who happens to be Mexican American, Aaliyah Chavez. She's from Lubbock, Texas. They signed her. She committed. She's going to go ball there. And they say she's the next Caitlin Clark. I've seen some video of her and she can hoop. She's got handle. She's a 5'10" guard who can hoop. So anyway, the point is that Spanish is not only football. Spanish is, you know, fans love the sport, and it's nice and it's beautiful how sports unites cultures. And hopefully that's what I like that I've been a part of, you know, to send the message of college sports, athletes, and Hispanics and education and all that all rolled up into one ball, and how we do with, and what we do with Oklahoma and what we've been doing with the Texans, with the Oilers back in the day. And you mentioned Jaime Jarrín and the Pioneers, René Cárdenas, who was his mentor in Los Angeles. He came and he was the first one to call Dodgers baseball in Spanish out in Los Angeles. And then he mentored Jaime Jarrín. I've had a chance to work with René Cárdenas here in Houston. He was the first voice of the Colt 45 and the first Spanish voice of the Texas Rangers as well. So when you surround and when you meet these kind of people that have laid the groundwork, and now what I come in and do is just you know, just a privilege. And I just feel so lucky to be able to call this a career for myself.
Man, I had a cousin who was a 5'9" little flea from Maracaibo, Venezuela, is in the Hall of Fame. Brought my dad here in 1964, and here I am. So,
Yeah.
God bless us all.
Right.
And if I could call in Spanish, I would, believe me. Enrique, I don't need to do it because Enrique Vasquez can do it. He calls the games. So, if you want to listen to the game in Espanol this weekend, you can do Ravens Texans on the Texans Radio Network with Enrique Vasquez. I always love getting together with you. So, from your perspective on the Ravens, I mean, this is a weird week. I hope you have a scorecard. We couldn't figure out who was on the field last week for the Ravens. A lot of the practice squad guys up now. A lot of the guys we saw in preseason games that Luke was talking about around here in July and August, now really being counted on for the Ravens. It's 1-3, not where the Ravens thought they were going to be at all. And This is a high-risk game, I think, for the Ravens this week. And you might see Cooper Rush on Sunday, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last time the Texans played Cooper Rush, it was a good day when he was with the Cowboys. So
Well, y'all hate the Cowboys, so I know that.
that was the case. So hopefully, like he's mentioned, it's about a test of the roster, the depth and what you can do putting that together. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. But like you mentioned, going into the season, this was the game that the Texans were going to face a franchise which they have never beaten over there in Baltimore. And this was the game that was going to prove that the Texans were for real in 2025. We never imagined that both teams were going to come into this game with a 1-3 record. So things are going to shake out pretty funny in the NFL. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. But certainly a big game for both teams. If you start 1-4, things are looking bleak as we go on. And then for the Texans, well, you go into the bye week, and everybody was thinking if the offense doesn't turn things around, that was the perfect time to make drastic changes. And of course, changing everything on the offense, including the offensive coordinator, was on the table. But they seem to wake up this past weekend. We'll see how they do against Baltimore this weekend.
Look, man, I can't have you on and not show proper respect to you as a one-time voice of the Houston Oilers without showing you all of my
Awesome.
cold. See, I have Oiler, I keep Oiler memorabilia. I have a whole box of it from my childhood that I have everything. I've had Pastorini on the show and all that stuff. But about a year ago, when Derrick Henry came in here, I found on the internet on sale, I think I only paid $30 for it, a Derrick Henry Oiler jersey. It says "Love You Blue" on the back. It's new school. It's all that. So I got it to be like fun and have a Derrick Henry jersey that's a little different and weird. But I would never wear it in front of you or Steph Stradley. McClain sort of likes it, even though it's weird. But like, I know it's offensive because I was offended by this in
Yeah.
Indianapolis for about 30 years. But it's such a great tradition of football in Houston, and there's a part of my Oilerdom that always wants to see the Texans do well for the fan base down there because it really has been. I feel that way about the Browns too, believe it or not. Just when teams struggle like that in really good, strong markets, I hope at some point the Texans make it over the top like the Bengals do and finally get to a Super Bowl at some point. Just not this week. We need to win this week, Enrique.
No, well, we'll see how it goes. But like you mentioned, last year or the last couple of years that the Titans have gone and played the Texans in the Oiler uniform costume, as we call it. It's been strange. You watch a 79, and immediately my mind goes to Ray Childers. With the Tennessee Titans
Of
jersey,
course.
Oiler, whatever. So that was a strange. And then just to call that game, with the memories that I have, growing up as an Oilers fan, getting a chance to call Oilers games and then seeing the Texans and the Oilers on the field at the same time was just strange, bizarre.
Look out, football. Here we come. Houston Oilers number one. Yeah, I mean, I still got that on 45. I appreciate you, Enrique. Thanks for coming on. And when I invited you on, I completely blanked out on the fact that you were the Houston Oilers announcer. So this feels like royalty to me having you
No,
on. So
appreciate it. Thank you very
I
much, Drew.
appreciate it. Enjoy the games this year and good luck with those with the Lady Sooners and the Boomer Sooners. And he calls games for Oklahoma. He calls games for the Houston Texans in Espanol. He is Enrique Vasquez. He's been doing it for 3.5 decades. And I great conversation. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Good luck after Sunday at 1 o'clock. All right. There you go. Enrique Vasquez down in Houston. We're talking to folks in Houston all week long. Luke is out in Owings Mills getting ready for the football game. I was going to say, if there's breaking news, the injury report and the infirmary report is everything this week. It's all brought to you by our friends at GBMC, our newest sponsors for Life Moments, as well as Bill Cole and our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy, making the WNST tech service happens. If you're on it, you'll get the breaking news first. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're getting ready for football and those Houston Texans at 1 o'clock on Sunday. We're Baltimore positive. Stay with us.